Welcome back to another episode of PM Quickie Reviews. This time we're talking about the movie Oblivion.
Starring Tom Cruise and Morgan Freeman.
I mean, if Morgan Freeman's in the movie at all, it's starring Morgan Freeman, of course.
Damn straight. Listen, he could have a cameo just walking by as an extra. It would still be starring Morgan Freeman.
Of course. I mean, that's how Morgan Freeman rolls. He's a badass. No, the movie is starring Tom Cruise, Morgan Freeman, Andrea Riseborough, and Olga Kurylenko, who is gorgeous.
Yes.
I mean, all the women are gorgeous in this movie, but Olga, come on.
Yeah, I've actually seen a few things of hers, and I was like, is that? No, it couldn't be. Is it? It totally is. So one thing that you might recognize her from is Quantum of Solace. She was the Bond girl in that.
Oh, yes.
And she was also the tracker in the movie Centurion, which if you haven't seen, go see it. It's a great
really,
film.
Centurion, we'll have to check that
yes.
out.
Yes. On Netflix
Instant.
It's
a movie night. Oblivion takes place in the year 2077. 60 years earlier, Earth was attacked by aliens known as scavengers or scavs. They destroyed the moon, which of course screwed up the planet because of all the gravitational shit.
Yeah.
Technical term.
Very, very technical term. Yes.
Gravitational shit.
Yes.
Essentially, they destroyed the moon to basically prepare the Earth for their invasion. So by destroying the moon, they wrecked a bunch of the Earth's resources. They caused things to get malaligned, giant tidal waves and earthquakes.
Basically, the tide is dependent on the moon and its gravity.
Of course. And so essentially, it's really kind of brilliant. I am surprised I haven't seen it in a sci-fi movie before. The idea of pre-taking on a planet, you actually destroy the local moon and screw up their weather and all that stuff. It's a brilliant idea because essentially the Earth turned on the Denizens of Earth. And tidal waves and earthquakes and volcanoes and all create. Well, I don't know if they had any volcanoes blowing up, but
you
basically the Earth just kind of shit all over itself. And everybody that survived then had to deal with the invasion. And so the invasion came in and attacked already weakened and destroyed Earth. It's really pretty brilliant, actually.
Very much so, yes.
So the scavengers, the scavs, actually had a pretty slick idea. So basically the idea is after that, humans, they won. They don't explain how, they don't explain when, they just say the humans won. They say that several times in the movie.
Yes, the humans won, but at the cost of the planet.
Yes, exactly. So Jack Harper, Tom Cruise's character, is technician number 49, and he works with Victoria, his lover, played by Andrea Riseborough, and they basically are up in this really high elevated safe haven. It's this like super futuristic house. It's like glass everywhere. They've got like a glass bottom pool outside. And he kicks around in this really, really badass hovercraft.
Yes, very much so.
I want one of those.
So bad.
So they're the only ones left on the planet. And their job is to maintain all of the automated systems that are slowly pulling the planet's resources out and then sending them to Titan, where the rest of the humans are. So they're literally the only two humans on the planet, supposedly. Of course, if anybody's seen the commercial, we know that Morgan Freeman is also there along with some friends. So as far as they know, they're the only two humans on the planet. They're there protecting and repairing all of the automated systems that are pulling water out of the oceans and all the systems that protect those, what do they call those things? Harvesters?
Yeah. Hydrogen harvesters, I believe.
Exactly, exactly. So they've got these harvesters that are constantly just sucking huge amounts of water up into them and slowly turning them off and sending them up into space for Titan, resources for the humans that have moved to Titan, which is where the whole human race is now, except for these two.
Right.
Right. And so the idea is that two humans come down and man the whole planet and basically protect all this stuff from the scavs and repair things when the scavs try and attack the little bit of bands of scabs still hanging out, causing trouble. They're there for a certain amount of time, and then when their time is up, they go off to Titan, and then another couple people come down and continue that process.
And they're on their 2 weeks' notice.
Yeah, they're there. They're right at the end. Every time that Jack is wanting to do anything that's outside of protocol, Victoria's like, no, I hate to be a stickler, but we're so close. Let's just finish our time out so we can go home.
Yeah. The way that it works is Jack goes out into the field, whereas Victoria, or Vika as he nicknames her and calls her throughout most of the movie, she is kind of like his operations manager. So she stays at the house and oversees a bunch of various scans and stuff like that, directs him to where he needs to go, and, you know, is kind of like his little oracle in a way, if you're thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, he's out working on things, and she's there monitoring him, scanning the surrounding areas to make sure that he's safe, interacting with the other drones and the harvesters to help coordinate his work so that he can be efficient and safe. And then she, in turn, communicates with the Tet. And the Tet is this giant triangular space station floating around Earth, which is basically their mission control. And that's where a substantial amount of humans are that are on their way to being processed and sent out to Titan. And so they're communicating with the Tet, and the Tet is what they often call mission control, right?
Mission control, yes.
Yeah. There's this lady who has this like really, really strong Southern accent.
Sally, if I remember right.
Yes, and she's constantly communicating with Victoria back and forth. But there's actually a really interesting element they add in there where the Tet, if it goes around the side of the planet to where it can't communicate with them, just like going around the backside of the moon or something with our astronauts, they lose communication. And so certain things need to be controlled by the Tet, by mission control, especially stuff involving some of the drones and involving some of the harvesters. They're there to prepare them, Jack and Victoria, but they can't actually control them. That's all up to mission control or the Tet. Anyway, off Jack is going on one of these missions trying to clear things up, and he gets attacked by a bunch of scavs. It actually looks like they laid a trap for him, which sounds like is a new thing.
Yeah, he's not used to that. The way that it's perceived, they're kind of almost animalistic scavengers. So the idea of them setting up traps.
Sound like, you know what they sound like? They remind me a lot of that suit that Leia was wearing in Return of the Jedi.
Very much so. I was trying to picture, like, I know that sounds familiar.
It sounds a lot like that when she's like, relax for a moment.
Yes.
I've always thought it'd be hilarious if somebody did some kind of YouTube video for that, had all the gear, had the voice changer so they could do that. And then if she actually left the mask on when she said, someone who loves you, I always thought that would be awesome. Anyway, so Jack is an interesting guy because even though he wants to finish his job and move on to Titan, and that's kind of the whole point, he is fascinated with Earth and he doesn't want to leave it. He still feels like Earth is home. He actually says at one point, even though all of the humans are on Titan, Earth is still feels like home. And he feels like even though we won the war, it's weird that we have to leave.
Yes.
So he has this kind of internal struggle with the whole idea of actually leaving Earth behind.
He keeps having these nightmares where he's actually on the Empire State Building pre-war. So it's they're kind of like, he's not really sure why he's having
these
nightmares.
Yeah, and he's thinking that it's just something that his mind has cobbled together because he's always reading books about the history and stuff and everything. But so there's this very strong connection with the planet that he feels, even though in theory he never lived on the planet during those times pre-war, but he feels the strong connection to all these old pre-war things. And out in his job, when he's out repairing drones and things like that, he inevitably ends up finding a book here and there, and he kind of slips it in his pocket, and he ends up having this sneaky little spot that he's found where he can kind of duck through this canyon where he goes out of radio range with Victoria and has this like little lake house. I mean, it's really simple,
awesome,
right?
Yeah.
But it's really awesome. And so it's got all these old artifacts essentially that he's found that he feels some kind of a connection with. And he doesn't really know why, but he has a strong connection with it and he just loves to be there. It's this strong connection with Earth and these dreams that he keeps having of this woman that continually cause this internal struggle and this pain of the idea of finishing their mission and just getting out. Enter the ship crash. I don't want to tell all of the things that are going on, but essentially there's a ship that crashes and he goes to the site, and the whole time mission control is like, no, 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 don't go there. We sent some drones there. Don't worry about it. Get out of there.
I wouldn't worry too much because that is in one of the trailers.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so he goes in and defies their orders and goes down and actually finds what looks like a American spaceship that just crashed there, and a bunch of people in these little, like, hypersleep pods.
Right, like stasis pods.
Exactly. And in comes the drones, and it starts blowing the people up. Now, the drones are meant to recognize not only his voice, but his face, so that when they see him, they don't shoot him. Because the scavs are actually kind of human-shaped. They're like humanoid, but with these crazy masks and this, like, intense vocal craziness like we talked about before. So instead of just shooting everything that moves, it can actually identify him. He goes into the ship and he sees this woman that he's been seeing in his dreams sitting in the stasis pod. And he thinks to himself, holy shit, I have to save her. And then in come the drones blowing up all the pods. And so he stands in between the pod and the drone and basically messes with the drone recognition system. And it sees him and it goes, okay, and it just flies away. So then he's able to actually save this woman. And then the story really begins.
That it does.
That it does. Yes, exactly. From there, things kind of spin under control because the first thing that she says when she wakes up is, Jack? So she recognizes him. So there's some history, even though in theory she's been in stasis for 60 plus years.
Yes.
Yeah, or more than that. 70-something years, right?
Yeah, I think they say that it's been like 60 or 70 years
since. Yeah, exactly. So he's thinking to himself, why am I dreaming about this woman? And why does she know me? What's going on? And they've alluded already that their memories are wiped, Jack and Victoria, before they start their mission, just so that they can focus on it, is what they say anyway.
Yeah.
And so the whole time you're thinking, okay. So, you know, his memory has been wiped, and maybe they kept him in stasis or something like that, and maybe the humans have this kind of terrible thing going on, and they're controlling stuff, and, you know, they're not so good, or maybe the aliens won, or who knows what's going on. You start to wonder what's happening here, and slowly things start to unroll, and we won't give away. Well, how much do you want to give away?
I think we've given away enough.
Yeah.
Because I think this is a movie that they really should see.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I kind of picked out almost all of the plot twists like well before they happen. I was like,
except for one. Except for the plot twist that he figures out when he goes into the irradiated zone.
I figured that one out.
I didn't think they were going to go that direction.
Oh, yeah. I thought that after certain events happened, I was like, that's a given.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. I had assumed that there was something going on over there in the irradiated section, which is supposedly where the truth is. If you want to see what's going on, Jack has to go into the irradiated section that he's always been not allowed to go into.
Yeah, and so his ship and his motorcycle, they have these sensors that they kind of show this digital wall.
It's like
wall
a big red wall.
That says radiation zone, and the whole thing is like, if you go into those, the radiation's so bad, it'll fry you in minutes. You'll be dead.
That's the idea. So he's always avoided it and never goes in there. Why would they have any reason to think that it is anything otherwise? And so he just avoids it. But when he gets captured, and Morgan Freeman's like, there's still people here.
Yeah.
We're on the ground. We're chilling. Like, the Tet and all those guys are lying to you. If you want to find the answer of what's really happening, go into the irradiated zone. Let's get into our review of the movie.
One thing that I got to say about this movie is, unlike a lot of sci-fi movies, it's just a straight up... It's starting to become vogue again, where you have movies that are just straight up sci-fi. It's not like an action movie that's a sci-fi movie or, you know...
Or a sci-fi thriller.
You know, this one, okay, yes, it does have action elements. Yes, it does have some tense elements, but it is first and foremost a sci-fi movie, which I really, really appreciated about it.
Yeah, it really feels kind of like a kickback. You know, it reminds me a lot of is another movie that came out a little while ago, which I guess maybe is like a sci-fi psychological thriller, but it has that purity to it. It was Moon with Sam Rockwell.
Yes.
It had a lot of moments like that where it's just appreciating the sci-fi environment. Moon's a lot slower. There's a lot more psychological thriller stuff going on in Moon, but it has a similar feel to it of a sort of a classic sci-fi movie that isn't trying to have something happen in a sci-fi setting, but the whole point is it's a sci-fi movie. That's what we're doing. I think it's really powerful.
Yeah, and it's also very beautiful.
Oh, God, everything's gorgeous.
It's just absolutely a gorgeous film. Absolutely gorgeous.
Like from the tech to the characters, to the suits, to the backgrounds, to
the landscape.
There are so many beautiful shots in this movie.
Yeah, even the drones. The drones are really, really cool.
The drones are hella cool. I love the sounds that they made.
Yes.
The sound in this movie was really excellent. The drones have this crazy buzzing and beeping that they do that is just, even though you're in the theater and it's not too loud that it hurts, it has this distorted, messed up sound to it that you can imagine how incredibly loud it is.
Yeah, although I gotta say, the acknowledging sound whenever
it's a little R2-D2.
It also is very cutesy. I'm like, oh, isn't that adorable? That giant killing death machine is so sweet.
Yeah, so audio, visual, really, really top-notch.
Yes.
You know, the acting is good. I mean, it's an action movie. It's a sci-fi movie. You know, it's not going to be this super deep psychological thriller where there's all these opportunities for character growth. It's more about what's happening in the world and the development on a grand scale, and these people are caught up into it in comparison to what's happening in these people's lives. You know, that's not the biggest part.
Yeah. It really is a movie that's pretty much all about the journey for
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's do our classic good and bad. So we've already talked about some good stuff. What were some things that bothered you, if you can find anything?
Like I said, the plot twists were very predictable.
Super predictable.
I saw them come in a mile away, every single one.
Absolutely.
So there was that going against it. What else do you think, JP?
Well, you know, one of the things that I found was a little frustrating was that the sort of underlying theme of the movie was love will conquer all. You know, that they still managed to cheapify the whole thing by that. Now, maybe that's me reading into it really deep. And I've been reading lots of writing books recently, and so I'm constantly looking for this meaning theme, this sort of armature beneath the surface that supports the story. But that's very much what this is about, is that it's like about the strength and power of love.
Yes, actually it is.
Yeah, and as much as that's really cool, it's just kind of like, Can we please not have any more Save the Rainforest movies? Can we please not have any more Love is We'll Conquer All movies? Can we please not have any more Human Will is the Greatest Thing movies? It's like, let's branch out a little bit here, people.
Plus, honestly, the way that things went down, the final thing that goes on with Jack kind of felt a little anticlimactic in some ways because of...
I wanted things to... I would have been happy with the movie ending maybe 20 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
Well, not 20 minutes, 10 minutes earlier. Yeah. The wrap-up has almost a happy after all ending kind of thing, and it's just like, what?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, I mean, it had its weak points. I feel like it was a movie that had the budget and the skillfulness of the people that creating the film to take it to a really high level and really respect the classic sci-fi film feeling. But it simplified itself. It simplified itself. It brought itself down. It wasn't really willing to have that harsh, hard impact. It ended on a high note, the good guys win sort of stuff. It's like, it's just, I'm more interested in things not being as predictable, I guess.
Right.
In the end, I think it was really, really entertaining.
I agree.
More than anything, totally, totally entertaining. So let's give our ratings. I'm going to say full price.
I was going to say the same thing.
Whenever you can see it. I don't know if I would have been happy to stand in line Midnight Show, but that's just because we love Midnight Shows. You know, this isn't a movie where you should like throw an elbow to your cousin to jump through the line and get to it. I mean, this isn't something that needs to be go there right now. But, you know, go see this movie. You know, you got a night out, go check it out. It's fully worth full price.
Definitely worth full price. And what would you give it for fun factor?
Ooh, fun factor. Man, this is high fun factor. I'm going to say 90.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I was wildly entertained. The set pieces were fantastic. The music and sound was, well, specifically the sound effects were amazing. And the acting was totally good and adequate, at least. The action was awesome. The women were beautiful. I mean, it was absolute just eye candy, the whole freaking movie. And it was just, there's so much excitement and fun things happening. It was a fun movie. More than anything, what this movie had going for it was that it's fun.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a fun factor of 80%.
80%, really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say it was like, wow, you know, so exciting, but it was definitely good. It was a lot of fun. The pacing was excellent.
Oh, right.
It does have its nice bits of action sprinkled in, which is nice. It's not like, you know, always constant going.
It wasn't wall-to-wall action, and it wasn't just a bunch of slow, introspective stuff.
Yeah, which makes it really nice. The action was a good change-up.
This is definitely a super skillfully made Hollywood blockbuster.
It's just
movie.
A very well-made Hollywood blockbuster, exactly.
Yeah, but that's what it is. It's a Hollywood blockbuster.
Yes.
It doesn't take the risks that I kind of wish it would have, but at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's a great Hollywood blockbuster movie, lots of fun popcorn movie.
Definitely. And especially at this time of year where there's not that much coming out, it's definitely worth your price to go see
Hell
this
yeah.
one.
Man, it has been absolutely a dry season. You could count on one hand how many awesome movies have come out in the past couple months, which is pathetic.
Yeah. Well,
now that's going to turn around in a hurry here.
This is the time of year that they do that, you know?
Right. I can't wait for the new stuff that's coming out here. We've got the new Superman movie, and we've got
Iron Man 3.
Iron Man, Wolverine. We've got like comic mayhem coming out here soon. I'm totally excited.
Yes.
This has been a quickie review, even though it's been way more than quick.
Oh, just one thing to my friend out there who believes that Tom Cruise is contractually obligated to run in every movie he's in. Yes, he does do some running in this film.
He does definitely do some running in this movie. Yes. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the review of Oblivion on pandamanga.com. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.